This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Thursday, March 16th of 2023. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, this week is Sunshine Week, a nationwide event which promotes open government and access to public information. We'll hear about an event happening this evening which focuses on access to information about who is behind book bans. A new Colorado Coalition for the Homeless report hopes to shift the debate among several Denver mayoral candidates. Then on the cannabis report, Leland Rucker follows up on Oklahoma's recent vote against legalizing recreational marijuana and how Oklahoma's choice to make it easy to get medical marijuana cards may be at play when questioning why the cannabis landscape is currently so different from what's happening here in Colorado. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour. After that, it's the supersized Fun Drive edition of Radio Nibbles. Host John Lindorf will be in with Gil Asakawa, author of the new book on Japanese American food. You know there will be goodies and treats to go around. Then at 9:30, Brian Easter will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead this morning, but first, a look at the headlines. With KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
Brighton police responded to reports of gunfire near Brighton High School early Wednesday afternoon, with a victim taking themselves to the hospital for non-life-threatening injuries. The shooting prompted several Brighton schools to go under secure status. As police responded to the shooting, a vehicle matching the description of the suspects led them to the vicinity of Prairie View High School, where they arrested two suspects. Police also arrested a third suspect a short time later. Brighton police would not confirm if the arrest involved high school students, but a late afternoon update by the school district said the incident involved a few students from Innovations and Options, Prairie View, and Brighton High Schools. Cultivando, a Latino-led Adams County nonprofit advocating for health equity issues, has presented the findings from their air monitoring study near the Commerce City Suncor refinery. The study revealed the detection of radioactive particles at the monitoring station located downwind from the refinery. Detlev Helmick, the scientist who operates the monitoring station, said no one had airborne radioactive particles on their radar, and the particles need more study to determine the source and amounts. Cultivano's year-long monitoring also evaluated benzene, sulfur dioxide, soot, and other particulate matter released by Suncor and other Commerce City businesses, including two propane distributors. Among the findings, the study found higher concentrations of pollutants at night, sudden spikes in the winter, and multiple pollutants mixing in the air at the same time. During Wednesday's news conference, Cultivano's executive director, Olga Gonzalez, criticized the state health department and the Environmental Protection Agency for not holding Suncor and other polluters accountable for air quality violations. Earlier this week, the Aurora City Council approved the purchase of farmland near Greeley and the property's associated water rights in a $7.75 million sale that could close by the end of the month. The proposed acquisition is under agreement with Wetco Farms. Aurora is funding the acquisition through its Capital Improvement Program and Water Fund. Alex Davis, Aurora's Deputy Director for Water Resources, told the Denver Gazette Aurora makes similar acquisitions roughly 3 to 4 times a year with the intent to provide its citizens with drinking water. Davis also told the Denver Gazette Aurora's water supplies are under pressure from climate change, eradication, and population growth. The town of Netherland is contracting with the Boulder County Sheriff's Office after a failed attempt to rebuild its local police department. KGNU's Alyssa Palazzo has the story.
Following a series of resignations last year, Netherland is shutting down its police department. Netherland's Deputy Town Marshal, Jennifer Fine-Loven, resigned from the police department in September of last year, despite a tax increase to beef up law enforcement recruitment and retention passed earlier in the year. The town attempted to fill the slot, but after months of searching and more than 70 applications, they chose a top candidate, who then decided not to take the job. Mayor Billy Giblin said the withdrawal put Netherland back at square one. Netherland previously partnered with the Boulder County Sheriff's Office for supplemental night and weekend shift coverage. The Boulder County Sheriff's Office will now exclusively police the town. Giblin told the Boulder Daily Camera the contraction of the police force was not an easy decision, saying the community wanted the police department to happen too. But unfortunately, it just doesn't seem like the prudent choice to make at this point. For KGNU, I'm Alyssa Palazzo.
The total theft of late model Kias and Hyundais has increased 82% from 2021 to 2022. That's according to a recent analysis by the Colorado State Patrol, the Colorado Auto Theft Prevention Authority, the Colorado Division of Insurance, and the Colorado Division of Motor Vehicles. The report says thieves are not targeting Kia and Hyundai models with touchless FOB ignition systems as much as models that start with a physical key. The agencies also report that due to the targeted theft of the models, some major auto insurance carriers are no longer insuring Kias and Hyundais, and they are urging vehicle owners to consider free manufacturer updates or other installed equipment that can improve vehicle security or deter theft. The Boulder Police Department will be giving out free catalytic converter etching kits for Boulder residents by appointment on March 23rd and March 29th. Residents can sign up at lockdownyourcar.org/events. The department says they cannot accept walk-ins but anticipate more events in the future. According to a Wednesday tweet by Boulder Police, the top five vehicle models in the past 90 days that are seeing the most catalytic converter thefts in Boulder are Toyota Prius, Hyundai Pilot, Toyota Sequoia, Jeep Cherokee, and Toyota Tundra. For today's weather, there's a continued chance of snow before mid-morning for Fort Collins and Denver, and a 50% chance of snow before 4 p.m. for Boulder. The National Weather Service predicts total daytime snow accumulation of less than a half an inch possible. Daytime winds could gust as high as 21 to 38 miles per hour. Fort Collins will have partly sunny skies with a high near 39 degrees. Boulder and Denver will have cloudy skies today with a high near 37 for Denver and 36 degrees for Boulder. For tonight, Denver and Boulder will continue to have cloudy skies with lows in the mid to upper teens. Fort Collins will have clear skies tonight with a low around 15 degrees. During the nighttime hours, winds could gust as high as 21 to 38 miles per hour. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. This week is Sunshine Week, a nationwide event which promotes open government and access to public information. Jeff Roberts, executive director of the Colorado Freedom of Information Coalition, says Sunshine Week is an opportunity to highlight the organization's year-round work in educating Coloradans about their rights under open government laws.
You know, we want to make sure that people are empowered with knowing how to get information from government. So how to use these laws when they want to make an open records request, what to do when you're denied, how do you frame the request? What do you do when you get a bill for records that's hundreds or thousands of dollars? Because that happens.
For Sunshine Week, the coalition is organizing a panel discussion on book banning today. One of the discussion topics is a case currently under review by the Colorado Court of Appeals related to the public library in Crested Butte.
When someone goes to the library, the public library, and wants to have a book banned, taken off the shelves, moved, they fill out a form. And so the issue that's happening in Gunnison County right now is, do those people have a right to be anonymous? And a judge at the district court level said yes.
The Colorado Freedom of Information Coalition has joined the Crested Butte News and the Gunnison County Library in appealing that decision. Roberts says allowing privacy in these cases could have far-reaching consequences.
If people can remain anonymous when they try to change that public library policy, we don't necessarily know if they are the people. They are people in the community, or they're people from some other state that are trying to do this, or part of some, you know, national movement.
The Sunshine Week conversation about book banning is this evening at 6:30 p.m. and will be live streamed at the YouTube channel for the Colorado Freedom of Information Coalition. A new report hopes to shift the debate among several Denver mayoral candidates away from ineffective strategies, including criminalization of the homeless, and towards successful interventions, including Housing First, coupled with medical, behavioral, and other social services. Eric Galatis has more.
Advocates for people experiencing homelessness are pushing back against proposals by several Denver mayoral candidates, including forced mental health holds, more police interventions, and zero tolerance for violating the city's camping ban. Kathy Alderman with the Colorado Coalition for the Homeless says no one wants to see tents on public sidewalks, but the problem is complex and is driven in part by a severe deficit in affordable housing.
And we can't arrest our way out of it. What we need to do is we need to scale up our housing programs, scale up our social services programs to the need that we have on the streets. We've not done that as a city, we've not done that as a state, and we haven't done it as a country.
The coalition has released a new report demonstrating how criminalization, camping bans, and the decades-old theory of treatment first simply do not work. People experiencing homelessness are already 11 times more likely to be arrested than people with housing, often for crimes that would be legal if they were housed, such as sitting or lying down and sharing food. Advocates say removing encampments through sweeps can actually disrupt progress people may be making towards a long-term housing solution, for example, by preventing them from getting medical treatment and missing housing-related appointments. Alderman says housing, alongside supportive services, is a proven solution to chronic homelessness.
And frankly, it's better for taxpayers because it costs half as much to house folks with supportive services than it does to leave them outside languishing in these emergency systems like jail, detox, emergency rooms.
It costs more than $13,000 to provide supportive housing per person each year, compared with between $21,000 and $40,000 spent by taxpayers for medical care, incarceration, detox treatment, and shelter services. Alderman says the data and years of experience show that strategies aiming to get tough on people experiencing homelessness will not resolve the underlying problems that have created the crisis.
They might work to eliminate visible homelessness, and they might work to get more people into jails and prisons, but those are not homelessness resolution strategies.
This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Colorado News Connection.
And this is Shannon Young here with Steve Miller. We are coming to you as we do three times a year, our very, very brief breaks from our regular programming to come to you to ask for your donations, listener. And we want to thank Bonnie in Boulder, who donated through the newsletter. She says that she loves Ginger's theme shows. Ginger actually just did a Bob Dylan theme show the other day, and that Alan Watts is her favorite show. So Bonnie, thanks for clicking through and for giving online. We appreciate you, and we thank you for your comments. We want to invite you to give us a call. What's that number, Steve?
303-449-4885, or you can go to kgnu.org to make a pledge. It's important for all of us to maintain the freedom of these airwaves, you know, to bring you the programming that you love. And we're asking you to help us call by community power, or helping us with community powered broadcasting.
How much is KGNU a part of your morning? I mean, I just want to invite you and the listener to think about how much you rely on KGNU throughout the week. When you hear breaking news, when you hear maybe information about a fire that's happening, when you sit down to listen to an in-depth discussion, perhaps about a new book or world affairs or the economy, really at any hour of the day. And then, of course, you have the great music programming, Morning Sound Alternative, Afternoon Sound Alternative, and Saturdays, which are not to be missed. That is our most popular day of the week. So wonderful programming that is available here at KGNU. Give us a call at 303-449-4885. Go online at kgnu.org. We have a couple of other examples of undercover stories coming right up. This one is from the Four Corners region. On April 7th, retired Navajo coal miners who are suffering from the effects of black lung disease will hold an informational meeting on opportunities for compensation and other benefits through the Department of Labor. The meeting will take place in Farmington, New Mexico. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, Chris Clements of KSJD has more.
The meetings are hosted by Orphelia Thomas, a member of the Navajo Nation and community liaison for Positive Nature Home Care, LLC. Thomas says the condition, otherwise known as co-workers' pneumoconiosis, is non-reversible, and that retired miners suffering from it who worked in the Navajo mines say they feel mistreated by their past employer.
Some of these miners, they stated that when they were working that, you know, they really didn't know what was going on. These miners know conversational English. They don't know the depth and the severity part of any medical issues that they have questions on. So a lot of them said that, you know, they never told us this. He never told us this.
Thomas also says that she knows of many elderly people that still live by these mines and have issues with respiratory illnesses.
They talk with you like you're their child, their children. They said, "My child, please help me." And they say that's Navajo. And when an elderly person tells you this, it kind of helps and it motivates you to have this word out.
She added that she also advocates for uranium miners, but shifted her focus to retired coal miners after it became apparent that there was a need for it in the community. For KSJD, I'm Chris Clements.
And now it's time for the Cannabis Report here on KGNU Community Radio. I'm Hannah Lee Myers, and I'm joined this morning, as always, by longtime cannabis correspondent Leland Rucker. Leland, thank you so much for being here.
Always good.
So this morning, we're going to talk a little bit about Oklahoma and cannabis, which, you know, interestingly, we have done a couple times because if you're keeping up with things, there's always some interesting happenings going on when it comes to cannabis and social issues and legislation in Oklahoma. So Leland, fill us in. What's going on now?
Well, you know, Oklahoma was the first red state to legalize medical marijuana, and that was a few years back, 2018. But the state recently, there was an election, and they turned down legal recreational marijuana 62-38%. Wow. Man, what just a reversal. Pat McFerrin, a spokesperson for Protect Our Kids, of course, it's got to be Protect Our Children, says, "We think this sends a clear message that Oklahomans oppose the unfettered access to marijuana we have experienced under our so-called medical program." Well, that is sort of true. 10% of all Oklahomans have medical cards because you don't have to give a reason. You just get a medical card. And, you know, that medical question won by 14 percentage point. I mean, this is big. And proponents, they said they wanted to add additional tax revenue. If you look at a map, there's a long line between Oklahoma and Texas, and the cities of Dallas and Fort Worth are less than 2 hours away. Will they drive up? Yeah, I think they will. Anybody that really wants marijuana is going to, you know, drive a couple of hours to get it done. And the interesting thing about Oklahoma is that it responded like no other state that had legalized medical marijuana by just making it easy. They made it easy for growers. They made it easy for pot shops to show up. And I remember asking a guy a couple of years ago from Oklahoma, you know, well, what about this year, 2023, when they will, you know, ask about recreational marijuana? And he said, "We don't really need it." He says, "I pass three dispensaries every day just going home." You know, there's lots of them out there. And the state just placed no limit on anything, and now they're having to go back and do that. They're going to have to limit a little bit. A 2021 story in MJ Biz Daily, which is a regular cannabis magazine, said the low license fees and cheap land helped the state earn a new moniker, Toklahoma.
So interesting. It's just really bizarre.
I mean, I even heard stories about people from Colorado who go to Oklahoma to grow their marijuana because it's a lot cheaper. You can get a license for a lot cheaper than you can get in Colorado. And the state has had to break this down. They've had to go after people. Mark Woodard, a spokesman for the Oklahoma Bureau of Narcotics, told a television station last year that 2,000 farms are diverting their supply to the illicit trade. and they're under investigation right now. So the state has a lot to do. And meanwhile, in Delaware, since that vote, House lawmakers again approved the legislation which eliminates penalties for use or possession of marijuana for personal use, basically legalizing marijuana. And they did that last year in the House, and the state Senate followed suit, but Governor John Carney vetoed the legislation and the House failed to override it. So there, there is some action there, but it got me to thinking, 21 states have legalized it for adults, but 25 states have never even had elections. So, the pace has slowed somewhat, I think. And I think a lot of that has to do with whether it's legal on a federal level or not. I think if it were legal on a federal level or decriminalized, probably more states would be more interested.
It's so interesting from a journalistic standpoint to also watch these different states go about doing this in their own way and respecting their right to do so, but also questioning, it seems like if some of the leadership in Oklahoma, for example, clearly still find cannabis to be quite problematic, that perhaps the method by which they've gone about treating cannabis is part of that problem.
They did it completely different than anybody else did. Everybody else made it hard. They made it easy.
And now there's all these investigations going on. It's so interesting here, listening to the program that we're trying to provide these various accounts of different ways that different states are going about addressing the changing norms around cannabis and seeing some of the problems that arise. We appreciate you bringing all that info to us. It's so interesting.
There's a lot going on and there's nothing going on. It's sort of that kind of a thing. They're definitely the pace of legalization has slowed. But I think that a lot of that has to do with the federal legalization. Just even people, Republicans are, unwilling to go against that kind of, when the government says it's illegal, they're willing to go with that.
Interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. Thank you.
Thank you.
And you can find the Cannabis Report here on KGNU the first and third Thursday of every month. For KGNU, I'm Hanley Myers.
That's just about all we have for today's Morning Magazine. However, we are still encouraging you to please give us a call at 303-449-4885 or to go onto our website at kgnu.org to donate to the station to keep us chugging along like we have been for the past 45 years. You can pick out some gifts there. For example, a limited edition 45th anniversary mug at the 88.5 level. If you want to be a solar member, that breaks down to just over $7 a month to get a mug. That is an option for you. Anybody who gives anything during this fun drive will be automatically entered into two drawings. One for a pair of tickets with camping to the sold out 51st annual Rocky Grass Festival that's happening in July 28th, 29th, and 30th, or for a pair of Eldora Adult Alpine tickets for the next season. Sustainers of local radio will be automatically entered into this drawing, so do give us a call at 303-449-4885 or online at kgnu.org. I've been your host and producer, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Stacy Johnson, Alyssa Palazzo, Alexis Kenyon, Maeve Conran, Chris Clements, Leland Rucker, and Hannah Lee Myers for their contributions to today's program. Thanks to Stacy, Elena, Steve, everybody who's out in the hallway answering the phones. Pick up the phone and talk to one of our very friendly volunteers. Coming up next is the supersized fun drive edition of Radio Nibbles. That's going to be on the other side of the BBC News headlines.